From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. We had a chance to sit down with two pro-life leaders in the Sacramento area to talk about the recent Supreme Court decision, a 5-4 decision, which has allowed life centers, pregnancy centers, people who believe in the sanctity of life to not have to do the state's bidding on this onerous California law, which told them that they had to post signs telling people about the availability of abortion. We sat down with Heidi Matzke, who is the executive director of the Alternatives Pregnancy Center, and also with Marie Leatherby, executive director of the Sacramento Life Center. We'll bring you both of those interviews now. Chip Sauer, and we're pleased to have in studio Heidi Matzke, the executive director of the Alternatives Pregnancy Center. Good morning.
Good morning. It's an honor to be here.
You're so smiling today.
For good reason.
Something good must have happened.
Something very good has happened.
Yeah. Tell us about the Supreme Court decision, obviously, the 5-4 decision. I was disappointed it wasn't 9-0, but it has the same effect in law dealing with so-called crisis pregnancy centers. We've kind of gone away from that.
Yeah, they don't like to use the word crisis for some reason.
Yeah, puts it in a negative to begin, which it isn't. So, you no longer have to post these onerous signs. You no longer are being forced to say something you don't want to say.
Right.
And how did that affect your clients? Did you ever have to actually post it, or did you, you know? Sacramento County apparently wasn't enforcing it.
Right. Well, I know ADF doesn't like us to really talk about whether or not we posted it. And so I haven't been given the okay to say.
ADF is Alliance Defending Freedom.
Alliance Defending Freedom is the organization that represented NIFLA, who represents all of us pregnancy centers.
And NIFLA was the umbrella group.
They are. They're kind of our protection agency, which I look at both of them really as a protection agency. But so I would say it didn't really affect, without saying, it didn't really affect our clients. Mm-hmm. This was still in a legal battle. And as a result of that, we didn't allow this bill, law to affect us until there was a Supreme Court decision, until we knew for sure one way or the other. We weren't going to allow it to hinder what we do. And we weren't going to be forced to say something that we didn't want to say.
That's well put. It seems to be real basic in American history that the government, I mean, there it is right there, and there's five freedoms in the First Amendment, the freedom of speech being one of them, and it stands to reason that the freedom to say whatever you want to, the flip side of that is the freedom not to be forced to say something you don't want to say.
Absolutely.
And it's so different in that. Here it's not commercial speech. It's not like telling a restaurant they have to post a sign in the bathroom saying employees must wash their hands or something.
No,
there's no public health issue here, and it's not commercial speech. You're not charging people.
No, nope.
And so it's the right of a private citizen to not say something. But the thing that was really awful about this, they were compelling you to say something which was directly contrary to your mission and your message.
Yeah. Not just that, but it was something that was backed by the abortion industry.
Yeah.
You know, this whole law came into place originally because the abortion industry, look, the bottom line is the abortion industry is being affected. And we are a light in a dark world. And we are helping women see the beauty of life. And that is affecting the bottom line of the abortion industry throughout the country. There's no doubt about that, you know.
The good news here, or the silver lining in this law coming to be, was that nobody would have bothered with you if you weren't effective.
Right, absolutely.
I don't care what they say. They have no effect on us at all. They knew it did. To the point where they went to the California legislature, got the California legislature to buy into it. The governor signed it.
Yeah.
The attorney general, Becerra, had to, defend it in court, which is what the attorney general does when a state has a law. And how he personally feels, I don't know, but it's not relevant. That's his job, is to defend it. And all the way through, I can't imagine that the people that voted for it and et cetera didn't realize, because they did, that this was basically a free speech issue.
Yes.
And that if the subject was anything but abortion, everybody would have said, this is outrageous.
Mm-hmm. You know, abortion is a very divisive topic, and you are either on one end of the spectrum or the other. There are very few people that are really in that middle ground.
Right.
And, you know, it is, it's just a privilege to know that ADF and NIFLA had our backs. I say, as the executive director, you know, when this law originally came out, it was really hard as the executive director of a nonprofit to, and especially this nonprofit, to think, how do we stay on mission? How do we continue to do what God has called us to do when you know that the enemy is attacking you? And it's not just the enemy being attacked, you know, to the point where we are being forced to say something that goes against our core beliefs. So how do you stand up for your First Amendment rights?
Right.
And yet, how do you stay on mission?
How do you stay on mission?
Stay on mission to what God has called you to do. And that's the one thing that I am so incredibly thankful for NIFLA and for ADF, because it allowed us to not get sidetracked with the political issues and all that's involved on the political side of this. And it allowed us to stay on mission and to continue to do the great work that we do. And, you know, it's ironic. If you had a whole room full of vehemently pro-choice people and you said, we're going to force you to speak a pro-life message, do you think that they would do that?
Yeah.
I mean, not in a million years.
And some, you know, you just kind of figure somewhere somebody is thinking, what is going on here? I'm pro-choice. Let's say this person says, I'm pro-choice, or maybe even pro-abortion, and yet I'm being forced. This is an example here. I'm not saying I'm that way. I'm pro-life, but and I'm being forced to spout a pro-life message by the state.
By the state.
The state is compelling me to do this.
And not just that. If you don't, you're going to be fined for it.
You're going to be fined. Yeah.
Yes.
You're in violation of the law, and you're going, man, that just shocks the conscience.
Yes, it does.
And
especially when you flip it on the pro-choice people, when you tell a pro-choice person, you know, you're going to be required by law to speak this message. All of a sudden, you know, the battle gloves come out.
Yeah.
And but yet that's exactly what was going on with our clinic. We were being forced to speak a message that goes against our core beliefs. And not just that, it's so important to know that many pregnancy centers throughout the country are filled with people who have had firsthand experience with abortion, and their lives have been deeply affected by a decision that they made, and they have chosen to repent of that, to ask God for forgiveness from that, and they are using that very wound, if you will, that very hurt and pain in their lives, to then serve the Lord and to give back. Sure. Because many of them say, you know, had I only known that something like a pregnancy center existed in our state or in our community, my life would look a lot different. So you, and then on top of it, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but our OBGYN doctor performed abortions for years before God got a hold of his heart and really pulled the scales off of his eyes.
Right.
And so to think that, you know, our clinics are filled with people who have had this deep pain and this deep hurt, and yet they're going to be forced to lead people that come into the clinic that were in their situations down that same road of pain and hurt, and we're being forced by the government to do that. That's
un-American.
It's unfathomable for many of these people. So it is, it's absolutely un-American. And, you know, it's unhumanity. I mean,
no,
if
is,
that's even
is,
a word.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF, is one of many organizations that really fight for freedom of speech, freedom of religion, Thomas More Society is, yeah. is one, the Liberty Council,
Pacific Justice Institute.
You can go through them, and it's great that they're out there and they do their work pro bono. They have a sort of a network of attorneys around, and I know you got a lot of amicus briefs from around, including the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops and California Catholic Conference. We're very, very much following this very closely and lobbying the court, if you will, filing briefs as well. But it really, I think, ultimately came down to freedom of speech. And it was one justice talked about that the law was gerrymandered to leave everybody out but you.
Yes. You know, I love that they use that word.
Yeah,
and I love that they, that's how
use.
They identified it because that's exactly what it was. And, you know, I have to be honest and say when I first heard that term, I had to go look in a dictionary to figure out exactly what it meant. And it was crazy.
Usually, you know, you hear it with drawing congressional districts or legislative districts and drawing it in such a way that you favor one party or the other, whoever's in power.
Yeah.
And both parties do it.
Yeah.
And they did the same thing to you. They we're going to have an exception here to exclude them. Because if we make them say something, they'll really go crazy, you know. And so we're going to leave everybody out except the pregnancy centers.
Yeah, and you know, it's alarming that the state of California would force us to be an advertisement for the abortion industry within our walls. And and yet, you know, when you go back to, you got to go back to the drawing board and you can't get caught in the weeds. This wasn't even about that. This was a freedom of speech, period. You can't, I mean, we can get off on all kinds of side tangents, but I'm so thankful that in our country today that our rights are still protected.
Absolutely.
And it's about more speech, really. It's not about less speech. It's about more speech. And we all have the freedom in our country to believe and to do and to say and to act as we desire, you know. And so it's just it's a blessing. You know, when I had been following, obviously, the ruling from the Scoutist blog for probably 3 weeks, not really knowing, you know, everybody's speculating on when the decision's going to come down. And I was hoping it would come on my birthday, which was June 22nd. They said that that's when it was going to come. And I thought, oh, Lord, wouldn't that be amazing? But ironically, it came on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And I was actually sitting out in my backyard doing my devotions. And that morning's devotion just happened to be on how Jesus fought. And I started to read my devotional on how Jesus fought. It was specifically talking about as he took the hard road down, picked up his cross and gave up everything for us. And, you know, we are called to fight like Jesus fights. And right as I was going through this devotional, my Fox News alerts came down on my phone and, it basically said, you know, we won. And I just sat there and cried. You know, it's so overwhelming for the last, 2 years to be stuck in the middle of a battle and not knowing the outcome. But our God reigns, and
this was one I was never worried about because the good Lord number
I should have hung out with you more then.
Because it's so elementary of free speech in this country. I mean, I was discussing this with somebody after the decision, and they said, "Well, this is just another chipping away of abortion rights." And I said, "Wait, let's just." Leave it out. Let's imagine that they told McDonald's they had to post a sign in their right there at the cash register saying if you'd rather have a Whopper than a Big Mac, here's Burger King's phone number and here's their address and here's their menu, and you can go down the street and get a Whopper. It's no different than that. It had nothing to do with. I mean, if you guys had applied to the county of Sacramento to put a Coke machine in your lobby because you wanted people to have a beverage while they're waiting and you needed a permit and they turned it down and you fight through and they turned it down. Only you. No, everybody else can do it, but you guys can't because you are the alternative's pregnancy center. and it got all the Supreme Court, somebody would say because you won that they're chipping away at abortion rights. No, they're just allowing them to have a Coke machine that everybody else can have.
Yeah,
you know, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But the bottom line again, which is good, is you're a burr under the saddle. We are.
We're effective. Doing our job. We're doing our job. And you know, we don't have a lot of money. Pregnancy centers don't. We have to go out and fight to be supported by churches and people. And so I tell people all the time that it is what was intended to harm pregnancy clinics throughout the country has now God has used for our good because it has put us in the spotlight. You know, every woman in America today pretty much knows that Planned Parenthood exists and they know that they have the right to have an abortion. But there are so many women that do not know that there are free services available to them when they're faced with an unplanned pregnancy. And we're not here to financially benefit from any choice that they make. We're here to simply just love on them, listen to them. Every woman that walks into our clinic has a different story.
Sure,
they have a different reason for why they're in the position that they're in. And ironically, it's like, you know, Planned Parenthood really offers one choice.
Right.
If a woman wants to have an abortion, she can go and have an abortion. But Planned Parenthood doesn't sit and talk about what's going on in their life physically or spiritually or emotionally, and doesn't offer them free resources like diapers and baby clothing. And you know, we had a young woman that came in not too long ago, not supported by her mom at all, not supported by her boyfriend. And she just basically said, you know, I have nowhere else to go. And I heard that you guys would listen to me and that you would be a safe place for me. And, you know, she walked out and said, anytime you need a woman to be a referral resource, I want to be that resource. Because she chose life, and we're mentoring her and influencing her life for God's glory. And, you know, it is a privilege to walk alongside these women who choose courageously to go against what society says is the easy thing to do.
And you're right. It is courageous.
It is. You know, not discounting the pain of the abortion choice, but that pain will, you know, be with a woman for the rest of her life. And But women need a place to go where they can stand up for the unborn and a place where somebody is going to listen to them and support them and tell them that they're capable. Yeah. And even when they don't believe in themselves, we're going to believe in them, and we're going to prove that they have been created by the living God, and they have great purpose in life, and that what they think in this unplanned pregnancy might be something that is something God planned to, you know, make them pay or whatever, is actually probably, when that baby comes, is something that God did to bring great blessing to their lives. And yeah, ironically, we have never had a woman come back to our clinic and say, you know,
I wish
I never had made this choice. But every almost weekly, we have people call and say, thank you so much. You believed in me when nobody else would, and you were the help and support that I needed. And here's a picture, or here's my precious baby to prove, you know, to just show you and just to say thank you.
I've had the opportunity to not counsel somebody. I'm not in that business. But, you know, just talk with somebody, with friends, and say, you know, I'm not going to tell you right from wrong or anything else, but because my hope is that they're going to go to it. I'll tell you this, though, as a statement of fact, that 2 years from now, if you choose life, you will look back and look at that baby, and you can't imagine that you ever considered an abortion.
Yeah.
So if it's a close call, you know, if there's any way you can choose life, choose it.
Yeah. I actually got a text and a picture that I'll show you when we're done here of a young woman that same thing a year ago was contemplating abortion. And I met with her personally because she was a referral from a church, somebody that I knew. And she just delivered on the 28th of June and she sent me a picture of her. And she said, she is my life. Yeah, I cannot imagine life without her. And so it's such a blessing and privilege to be used by God to push back the darkness in this world and push back the darkness in the hearts of women who, you know, believe the lies that society tells them, that their worth and their value is very little. And we get to speak a completely different message to them.
Yeah, the thing that really struck me with this one too is the notion of forced speech. And I'll tell you, whether you're a liberal or a conservative or whatever you are,
you do not want to
be
forced.
Terrified, yep, that the state of California or the federal government or anybody else, I wouldn't want President Obama giving me a script that I have to read, and I wouldn't want President Trump giving me a script that I have to read.
Right.
You have to read this, Bob, whether you believe it or you. In fact, it's contrary to what you believe, and the government is going to force you to read this. I that should be terrifying to everybody.
Yeah,
It should have been a 9-0 decision, but we know how that gets with abortion.
Yeah,
it becomes. People lose.
It's a deeply divisive issue, for sure. And but our rights were protected, and glory to God, and we get to move on and continue to do. Like, I've had so many people ask me here recently, so, you know, what now? You know, what are you going to do now that this decision has come down? And I just tell them, you know, we get to continue to do the great work that we've always done, and we don't have to do that with fear of being punished, if you will, financially as a result of it. And again, you go back to, how is that even possible? How is it possible that in our country we would be forced to say something so contrary to what we believe, so contrary to why we exist? And I've been asked quite a bit on panels here recently, it's just caring for women. You know, why wouldn't you want women to know all of their options?
Exactly.
And ironically, I always say back to them, do you know what that statement was? That statement was one option.
Right.
That statement forced us to say one message, and the message was clearly abortion.
So
if you truly care about women, if you truly care about them having all their options, why are you forcing us to say one message with one choice?
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's because of who it was backed by.
Because when it's one choice, there's no choice.
Not right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. I had a young woman, I'm not sure how much time we have left, but I had a young woman that came in here recently of 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, and she's 7 months pregnant. And she came in and said, Heidi, I think I want to give my baby up for adoption. You know, she's a senior and just an incredibly brave young woman. And after speaking with her, obviously, for quite a while, I did say, can I just ask you one question? You know, our culture makes it so difficult for young women like you, especially in high school, to have your baby and not look down on. You were a woman of great courage. And now you're doing something even more courageous, which most young women will not do because they don't want their body to go through all those changes.
Right.
So why? I mean, you are a young woman, 17 years old, in California. You know abortion exists. What was it in your heart that made you not only choose life, but now choose to move forward with an adoption choice? And she said, well, first of all, she said, I could never do that. That's killing my baby. Mm-hmm. I could never do that. Mm-hmm. And she said, and secondly, I don't want my baby raised in the home that I grew up in. And I want more for that, for my baby than that. And ironically, she was 7 months pregnant and she was coming back to for an adoption, a second round of adoption questionnaire, whatnot. She went into labor after she left. And she delivered her baby at 32 weeks, healthy. The baby was in the NICU. And this young couple that was chosen by her to take the baby had been waiting 3 years and had two failed adoptions. Mm-hmm. And this young, the mother, the adoptive mother, was that night was at a church event speaking about being in the dark places with the Lord mm-hmm. and still trusting him. Mm-hmm. And that very night, baby was born. And so just what an incredibly young woman to not only in our culture still stand up and say, no, this is terribly wrong. Yeah. And then, but to also move forward with a very courageous choice, which we don't get to talk about very often.
Yeah.
Often is adoption. Yeah. And so I just think about that young woman coming into our clinic and seeing this posting on our wall that says, here's where to go to get a free low cost abortion. Right. And here's this woman who is, you know, trying to be strong and trying to be courageous. And yet if she sees this message, what's going to go through her mind before she even has has an opportunity to talk to us. Yeah. And, so anyways, we won. What a great thing.
It was a great thing. Praise the Lord. No, Heidi, always a pleasure to see you, and, greatly appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. Congratulations. Live and in person, we have Marie Leatherby in our studio.
Good morning.
Today. Marie is the executive director of the Sacramento Life Center. And are you still celebrating?
Yes. Yeah, I've celebrated all week, every chance I could.
Very good. Very good. We're talking about the Supreme Court decision. It was a long title versus Becerra, who is the Attorney General of California. So the way this thing works, when the state has a law, it's generally up to the Attorney General of the state to defend the state's law and what's the state's thinking, et cetera, even though the law was passed not by the Attorney General, but by the legislature and
correct.
Then signed by the governor. Mm-hmm. So this was the... what was the name of the plaintiff?
National Institute of Family Life, and
doesn't roll off the tongue. Yeah,
no, yeah. It doesn't.
Very, yeah. Very, very long. Yeah,
yeah.
And the I remember looking up a case when the state of Oregon banned Catholic schools less than 100 years ago in the 1920s. They banned Catholic schools in the state of Oregon.
I did not know that.
With the action of the Klan and various other groups, and we were Catholics, of course. We were pledging not to the United States but to Rome and all this stuff.
Okay.
And they actually banned them. But I remember the title of the case was something like the Sisters of Jesus and Mary and Joseph versus, you know, and I thought, well, that's not a fair fight.
Yeah, really?
You know you're going to win that one.
Yeah.
And they did win. And
they
It was a unanimous decision. But it's just, and then, of course, we had in more recently with the Affordable Care Act, the Little Sisters of the Poor versus the federal government, you know. So some of these titles are pretty amusing.
Yes.
When you see who's lined up on which side.
I know. Yeah.
You may as well be suing God.
Yeah, I know. Yep. Yeah.
So this was a big day.
It was a big day.
5-4 decision.
Yes.
And it came last week. And in the final week of the court, I would love to know what the thinking is. Occasionally they will release them earlier. Sometimes in March we saw one.
Right.
I think it was on... There was one on sports gambling or something that came out about a month earlier, and you go, well,
right.
And obviously, if it's something where an emergency situation where somebody's in prison
right.
or something
they'll
and shouldn't
out.
Be, they'll come
quicker.
Out right away.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones, they kind of dribbled
I know.
Them out
we
like
heard
with some drama.
Yeah. We heard that the closer they are and the more controversial, the later they come out. And I guess ours came out on the last day.
And yet, I read one thing saying it took them until the last second to decide. And as I understand it, that's not really true. This pretty much was a done deal, and they're just sitting on it.
I think so. I think going back and listening to the arguments, they all knew which
they
way.
They knew where they were going. In fact, the oral arguments tend to be... very frequently frosting on the cake. They're not.
Yeah.
They're sort of for public consumption and
I think
maybe
so.
A little bit of ego on the part of the justices.
Yes.
And show how smart I am. But really, it's almost all decided ahead of time through the various filings.
I think you're right. I think they knew before we ever went and listened. Although I got to get in and listen, it was fascinating arguments for and against. But I think we're fortunate. Our hometown boy, Justice Kennedy, wrote a beautiful in support of us.
His concurrence in the majority opinion. I think the actual opinion was written by Clarence Thomas.
Right.
And then Justice Kennedy had a concurrence agreeing with it, but kind of putting his own spin on it. And
yes.
I've said for many years now they should just suspend all Supreme Court votes and just say, Anthony, which way are you going here?
Because
this seems to be, and a couple of times it's been stuff that as Catholics we're very unhappy with.
Right.
And other times, he's even mixed bag on the right to abortion, the old Roe v. Wade and et cetera.
Right.
He was on the side of keeping abortion legal, even though he wasn't part of the Roe v. Wade. But then when it came to late term abortion, he was on the other side. He was on our side, if you will.
Right.
You know, he's on the side of life. So,
yeah.
So it's a mixed bag. And, mm-hmm. and now, of course, everybody knows that he is a Sacramentan. And he I was reading the story in the Bee, and one Sacramento lawyer was saying, oh, we used to be altar service together at Holy Spirit, you know. And
yeah,
and
then isn't that amazing?
Went to McClatchy and
Then taught law here.
And taught lawyer at McGeorge for years.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, he's on the U.S. Supreme Court appointed by President Reagan.
Yes. Yeah.
So a long and interesting history. And, of course, now there will be a vacancy, which President Trump has said he's going to fill on or name, not necessarily fill, because
right.
it has to be approved
on
July the 9th.
So, right, coming up. Big, so it's big
really
things
right
happening.
Around the corner.
Yes, yeah.
And so the decision itself was a 5-4 decision. And when I've talked about this, and I've written about it as well over the past, what's it been, a year and a half?
Well, the law went through the legislature in 2014, was passed in we had to start in 2015. So it's been 3-4 years of,
Then you went to the Ninth Circuit and lost.
Right. Yeah, the injunction. Mm-hmm.
And it's stunning. I mean, I always have cast it as it's not a freedom of religion issue. It's a freedom of speech issue.
Speech.
Right. You know.
Yes.
And have always said if it was anything other than abortion, the topic, and abortion being the topic is only tangential here. It's not the central issue. The central issue
not,
is, can you compel somebody to say something they don't want to say, especially something that is directly contrary to your mission?
Right.
And especially, it'd be one thing if you were a government agency or took government money.
Right.
Or even if you charged, because then it could be commercial speech.
Right.
You know, like Ford Motor Company can't say our F-150 truck gets 200 miles to the gallon if it doesn't. It's
right.
commercial speech, and we've decided that commercial speech is in a different category. You can't just lie to the people. But believe it or not, the First Amendment even protects compulsive liars. You can stand on the street corner and say any crazy thing you want to, and you may even scare some people.
Right.
But it's protected. Not that there was any falsehoods going on here, but, you know, I've heard people say, well, it's just another chipping away at abortion rights. And I'm going, this case had nothing to do with abortion rights. I mean, it would be as if you wanted to put a Coke machine in your lobby.
Right.
And somebody, the state somehow said, you can't put a Coke machine in your lobby because you're a crisis pregnancy center. And then you win the case, and people say, oh, they're chipping away at abortion rights. It had nothing to do with the Coke machine.
No, it really didn't. And the whole thing was based back in the beginning on a lot of falsehoods.
Yeah, absolutely.
And misnomers about pregnancy centers. You know, NARAL did this undercover investigation, which Sacramento Life Center was part of. They came in, but, you know, found nothing wrong. But they're going on that were fake clinics, which were not. Were fully licensed medical clinics by the state, were federally accredited, and that we lie to women, which we don't. We want women to make the most informed decision on all their options.
Right.
But it was forcing us to, because people are saying, well, why wouldn't you want a woman informed? We do, but we don't want a woman walking in, not even knowing if she's pregnant, in a crisis, reading this sign that says, hey, the state, you know, here's a phone number, call them for an abortion. It's, that's not even good medicine before she even sees a medical person.
Well, and as some of the justices, they referred to it as gerrymandering. They wrote the law in such a way that it affected you and you alone.
Yeah, 60 facilities in the state. Yeah. And we're not the only ones women go to. No. And, you know, if you were a pro-life private doctor, you didn't have to do it. They were just targeting us,
It was very obvious. And I think with people like Justice Kennedy, that's what really pushed him over the edge. This was aimed specifically at somebody whose message you didn't like.
Right.
And we've got the votes, and we're going to do it.
Right.
You know, and they had to know when they passed that law that this, if somebody challenged it, it was not going to. I mean, I never, there are many laws where I go, man, it's going to be interesting to see how the court goes. This one was, in my mind, was a slam dunk.
Right.
Even though it ended up being 5-4, which is one of the unfortunate things, the court.
It came down to abortion.
It's become political as well.
Yeah, too bad, but it has.
And which is a separate matter altogether. Yeah. But the independent judiciary seems to be a thing of the past in the last 20 or 30 years.
And, right.
It's even though each president who gets the opportunity says, "Oh, there's no litmus test. No, we never ask them. We're just looking for outstanding jurists." There is a litmus test. There always is a litmus test. And it seems to be either side, abortion is one of the biggest litmus
tests. It's one of the biggest.
And I mean, too, I remember with Chief Justice Roberts and then with Amy Coney Barrett, who was going to be a circuit judge, not a Supreme Court, with a professor at Notre Dame. Dianne Feinstein just going right after him saying, "You're Catholic, and by golly, I've read some of your writing." And she said something like, "The dogma lives strongly in you." And that was a negative.
It's okay
if you're Catholic and you just kind of show up 15 minutes late for Mass and leave early. I don't mind that kind of Catholic, but you actually believe this stuff.
Right.
You know, like that was a negative. And you go, "Ooh."
I know. Yeah, times have changed quickly. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's kind of how we felt here. And the dissent said, well, there's been informed, you know, you've had to have formed consent in pro-life states that inform a woman that there's adoption things. And what sauce for
and
the
so
goose.
So we have to be consistent.
We have to be consistent. But when we fought it here at the legislature, we even offered if an abortion clinic has to give information about us, that would be fair.
Hey, and it'd be a great exchange.
It would.
Because very few of your people who come for your services are going to read that and change their mind. Very few.
Right.
Whereas of Planned Parenthood's, somebody goes in there and reads a sign saying, you know, if you're considering keeping a baby or adoption or anything like that, these people at Life Center are willing to help you.
Right.
And they're willing to talk to
you. And
we
do get some referrals from Planned Parenthood and thing. It's just the politics of it all. None of us, you know, the Life Center, we're non-political. Yeah. We're non...
Well, you don't... You see, that's... I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you don't go to the legislature and lobby on abortion or...
No.
You stay completely out of politics.
Correct. Completely out of it. We're just there to be a safe... place for women to come and get free services, and they love it, you know. And fortunately, most of our clients probably don't read all these arguments and are just looking for a place that'll help them, you know, make a big decision, people that'll listen to them and their issues and help them through it. So that's all we're about.
At some point, were you allowed, was there an injunction that where you didn't have to until the court post this or not?
No, that would have been left up to local ordinances.
Uh-huh.
And Sacramento never enforced or unenforced it in any way. We never heard from our local jurisdiction who was supposed to enforce it. But we did hear from NARAL and the SACB and all those places that were really putting pressure on us.
Uh-huh.
To put it up and local
funders.
Did
you have it up or not?
So we did after quite a few months of getting beat up, put it up just because we're like, well, what's best for our patients? Mm-hmm. We don't want them to feel, you know, all this negative publicity.
Right.
So we put it up with a, you know, with a disclosure.
Right.
What our mission is, mm-hmm. and that we were only required under duress to post this.
Yeah.
So, and we put our mission right next to it. And so,
did you have to, in one of the opinions, mm-hmm. I thought I read where one of the majority opinions, that you were required to distribute it on a flyer to them as well? And I wasn't aware of that.
Well, you could either have it posted or in the original paperwork, it had to be included.
Okay.
And we figured the least likely place for a woman to would be, you know, it's posted there.
Right.
But we had the choice.
Right. And yeah. And the interesting thing, as one justice pointed out, was it's scripted. I mean, it is so onerous to think, and again, leave abortion out of it, to think of the government telling me, here's the script, and you must either read this or post it, and go, man. And, you know, it's one thing, like in a restaurant, you know, employers must wash their hands. It's a public health issue. It's a commercial business.
Right.
Et cetera. But here I am just doing whatever, and they require me to say things that I don't want to say. It is just... I don't care what the issue is. That's frightening.
Especially,
stuff.
You know, you can make comparisons of so many things, but this is actually a human person's life on the line.
Yeah.
You know, that there's, I don't think there's anything that compares to that.
Well, I mean, imagine, you know, one day they say to the Catholic Church, you must post this on the door to the church, and everybody has to sign something saying they read it, saying that, we have no evidence or proof that this is the actual body and blood of Jesus Christ. That is just a belief, and you're free to believe it or not believe
right.
it as you
yep.
receive Holy Communion.
I could
and you go, oh, well, what do we do now? We don't. That's not our belief. That's not our
right. Our mission.
But,
and
our mission.
Our,
but oh yeah. Well, you're deceiving people. You know, you're telling them that this piece of bread, you have no scientific evidence
that's
of that, and you can't prove it.
Good
and
analogy.
We are not going to allow you to do that because you're brainwashing people. On and on and on. The same kind of arguments.
Yes.
If the state can compel you to say something you don't want to say, they can compel
anybody.
Of us. And I would say to liberals and conservatives alike, I know conservatives would have been very unhappy if the Obama administration was telling them what they have to say, and liberals be very unhappy if the Trump administration
right.
is telling them what they have to say.
Right.
You know,
that our Constitution, thank God, is a document we all should be standing by.
You better stand up and say, I don't want anybody telling it. Well, even if you're on the other side of
a specific issue,
mm-hmm. remember, it's whose ox is being gored the next time is going to be you.
Yeah. Yep. And I always tell them, you know, the Bee came out with a really, I was disappointed in their article about
they
the
said
whole.
It was
a mistake. And
a mistake, and it was a winning day for disinformation.
Yeah. Well, they used all the NARAL talking points. And, you know, I just want to invite them in to see what we do. In fact, when the Bee has come in, they love our work.
Well, see,
this is a couple of editors that,
I read the editorial,
mm-hmm.
and it was stunning in that it's the old thing, tell a lie often enough,
right.
and it becomes fact. And it has become fact. I honestly think in their minds, it has become fact that your whole goal is disinformation, you're lying to women, browbeating and proselytizing.
Right.
Are you baptizing people?
No.
I mean, it is like you're the furthest thing from browbeating and proselytizing.
Right. And you're welcome to come or go. You know, we're not.
Yeah. When the other thing is this notion that, wait a minute, is this some kind of a clearinghouse? You go to the state and you say, I want to have an abortion. And then the state says, well, first you have to go to the Sacramento Life Center. And they're going to browbeat you and proselytize you. It's completely voluntary, anybody showing up.
Right.
You know, and the notion that you.
And we're called the Life Center. We're not trying to hide anything.
Was the other thing that in the B editorial.
Yeah.
They're deceptively named to make. Like abortions are us, and you're really a life center. No, I don't think so.
No,
I haven't. You know, alternatives pregnancy
Very
center, Sacramento
transparent.
Life Center.
Yes,
it's like, and the other thing, it's like how incredibly demeaning to women. Like I walked into the Sacramento Life Center, and I thought it was an abortion clinic. And
well, I think like they make women sound. Dumb and women are smart. Yeah, they're
like
yeah.
Oh, I had no idea that they. It's like it's goofy,
right?
It would be funny if the issue wasn't so serious.
I know. Yeah. Yep. But we're so happy with it, and
yeah, you take it. You know, whether it's 9-0 or 5-4, it has.
And they're planning the next steps as we speak to. You know, be on the double attack. They even stated, you know, you shot one arrow over the bow while we're shooting three back at you. Yeah. So, you know, we just keep doing our work and knowing God's blessed it for 46 years and lots of people are grateful and support us. And we need the support, especially now.
the bottom line is you're obviously a burr under the saddle because if you were not having an effect, they wouldn't bother.
I know.
They wouldn't bother. They'd say, no, it doesn't affect our business at all. Good luck to them.
Right.
You know, they can do whatever they want to, and they're not changing anybody's mind, so who cares? They wouldn't spend the time and effort,
and
especially
money.
To fight this thing all the way to the Supreme Court, if they didn't think you were a real threat to what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Over 90% of the women that come to us will end up carrying. And, you know, we do see some women with significant issues, you know.
Sure.
But, and we're not heartless to what they're going through. In fact, we're, you know.
You're probably more aware of it than most anybody in the society is.
Right. We're right there on the front.
What they're going through.
Front lines. Yeah. And sometimes we're the only people that will sit down and listen to them and what do you want, you know, and rarely does a woman want an abortion and, you know, but they're facing lots of challenges and we're there to help them through and they're, most of them are temporary and help them realize that. And,
It is interesting. Them. You mm-hmm. see, you see that even with the suicides where you go, most of these crises are temporary.
Yeah.
You know, you just get through them, you know?
Right. And they just, it's, you know, need a way out. And they get that immediate relief of, wow, you know, that was the best decision. But, you know, we have a counseling for women that have had an abortion that may be struggling with it. And I can tell you most of them don't start struggling for 20 or 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like we just had a woman this week, she's 60 years old. She has no faith, but something in her conscience is telling her, I need to be forgiven. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that's...
So do you have, I know that mm-hmm. the diocese, of course, has Project mm-hmm. Rachel and the Rachel's Vineyard. Do you
yes.
have something separate from that?
Well, we do an ongoing, we recommend, especially for Catholic women, to go through that program. Mm-hmm. And I've always worked hand in hand. But we do have our own private counseling and programs if a woman needs more ongoing support. And sometimes a woman might feel she needs more. So there's several different programs depending on her belief system and things that we help them through.
Really
so,
good.
Yeah, it's a really nice
Did you, mm-hmm. you must have, did you blow up some balloons and have a party?
Well, I went out and had a few cocktails. No, because it's been a long haul. But no, we're still celebrating. And I was going to actually, you know, burn the sign, but I decided maybe I'd put it in as a legacy to remember, you know, when the state came against.
It'd be a museum piece.
A museum piece. Yes, that's what I thought.
You
I'm going to keep it in the archives.
It's amazing, you know, when you the various museums there are that sort of document things in human history that weren't the best, like the Holocaust Museum.
Right.
I mean, obviously, this is different, but that's to actually read and see what happened. And you know, it doesn't commemorate, it doesn't celebrate, but it really, you know, you're a junior high kid and you're reading that, you're going, they really did this to people?
It's unbelievable.
So it needs to be preserved.
Someday, I think
13 languages, no less, in some areas.
Yes, L.A. had 13. L.A. had it worse than we did because their local government started the fining of them, forced them to do it, and even found where they would have to pay more than the $1,000, some, you know, thing in their law. And so they forced them. And then those poor clinics forced into that actually had pro-life people protesting because they posted it and that they should have just shut down. So, you know, it's been really hard for all of us, you know, both sides, because, you know, I almost had people quit when, you know, we decided maybe we should post it. It's the best thing instead of getting all this negative publicity. And so it was a tough, tough thing to go through. It really was. Yeah.
Well, I remain confident that probably not a single mind was changed by that sign.
I don't think so. Yeah. I really don't. And, you know, and that's what they say, too. Well, it shouldn't have been such a big deal because we help women get on Medi-Cal insurance. Right. We send them to Health and Human Services. But it was the message that we'd had to give them for that instead of a encouraging for life message.
Yeah, at some point you have to draw a line in the sand and say, maybe this won't make any difference, but if we let them do this, if we roll over and let them do this, that will empower them to...
Yeah, their ultimate goal is to shut us down.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So step one, so you fought it and won. And it's a great day.
Yeah, it was a great day.
So speaking of great days, Saturday, November the 10th,
yes.
Honoring our Irish clergy.
Yes.
This is the Sacramento Life Center's annual gala. And so many great Irish priests
in this diocese. There's only one left as a pastor. They're all retired but one.
In fact, I was at the vocations dinner on Saturday night up at St. Patrick's, another Irish person. And it was in Placerville and had the great privilege of introducing Father Looney.
Oh, who's left today on a pilgrimage to.
In fact, his birthday, I believe, is 4th of July.
Yes. So
he was my pastor for a while in St. James.
Right.
He officiated at my mother's funeral 10 years ago, even though he was no longer the pastor. We were so fond of him. We ask him if he would come back. And he's just, Monsignor Murphy.
Oh, my gosh. There's so many.
You just go on and on and on. And it was interesting. St. Patrick's in Placerville, just outside the church, they had a stone memorial with all the previous pastors. And I mean, there were a lot of Irish names.
I know. I think 75-80% of the priests here were Irish.
Yeah, when I was growing up, Irish priest was redundant.
Yes.
I mean, it was just redundant. They were all...
They're so wonderful. Yeah. And people have said, well, I thought you weren't 100, you know, you're an ecumenical, not Catholic. I said, but we wanted to honor them because they have supported the Life Center since its inception. In fact, Father Healy and Vincent Riley both were the founders of the Life Center, and they're still with us. So we want to honor them and all the others, and memorial of Father Kavanaugh, who was a great supporter of life. And I said, no one supported the Life Center. They give personally, as well as, you know, their parishes participating in our fundraisers and the dinner. So I thought, if we're going to start honoring somebody, have to be first.
Father Dan, who started the food bank.
Yes. In fact, he just did a wonderful film that's being released what a year for that.
He wrote a book. And it's about a 20-minute film. And,
yes. It's really nice. I've seen it. I think we might even have it playing on the side at the dinner, because it's remarkable what they've all done and given us in this region, besides supporting life, you know, our everything, the food bank.
Well, that'll be wonderful.
It'll be fun. They're gonna get up and sing.
Are they really?
Yeah, we'll have a lot of fun Irish things. We have a violinist playing Irish music, and then after, from Davis, the little Irish band that plays sing along for people that want to stay. And so, although it's about the Life Center, we want to celebrate the Irish and their contribution to life, especially on a year when their country lost the vote. And they're brokenhearted about that.
Hearing Father Looney speak on Saturday night, talking about, he said, when I was in the seminary, it was greatly encouraged in the families, and we had 15 seminaries overflowing, and now there's only two of them remaining. And even they have almost very few people. And he said, my home diocese had an ordination of a priest this year. He said it was the first, just one.
One.
He says the first one in 13 years.
Wow, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, to a country that's been so generous with its priest and sending them to, as missionaries to the Diocese of Sacramento.
Yeah, since the gold rush. I know.
The thing that almost without exception, when I've had the opportunity to interview some of them, they said, we got off that plane in July.
And all they have
is, what have I done? All they have is that gloom. And came from 60 degrees in Dublin to.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So, well, God bless them. They're wonderful people and done a lot for us. So.
Indeed they have. And this will take place on November the 10th, which is a Saturday night.
Yes.
And it will honor our Irish clergy. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yes.
As well. It's at the Hyatt Regency Ballroom. And you can go to saclife.org, learn all about
it. Yes.
Or are you selling tickets already?
No, they won't come out for about a month.
Okay.
But just save the date. Put it on your calendar.
916-451-4357. And are you serving corned beef and cabbage?
We were thinking about doing something like that.
Boiled potatoes?
Yeah.
I can say this, and I know you can, because we're empowered because we are Irish.
You
can make fun of yourself.
Yes.
It's not the craziest food in the world.
I know. Yeah. No, I just went to Ireland last year, and it was...
But, it's funny. I mean, because... I'm sure there will be Irish people out there saying, we have a tremendous culinary. And I love corned beef, but,
it was like everywhere we went, it was the same four menu items. But it
especially
was still fun.
If you went into a pub.
Yes.
These thin little sandwiches on white bread with some little slice of something.
Yes. But I've never had a better time. Something.
I remember going in to a pub. I was there with one of my college tennis buddies, and we were playing some tennis tournaments in Ireland. And so we went into a pub one evening, and it was Guinness, of course. It looks almost
black
in the glass.
Yeah.
And so I said, "Oh, you stay here. I'll go up and get us a couple of beers." And they pull them. And so I paid, and it was a female bartender, and I went and I started to grab two of the glasses that she had set out. She was pouring them as she went, and out of a tap. And she kind of slaps my hand. She says, "Those are not ready yet." And I said, "What?" Because it was about half foam.
Let
it go down, and then put a little more in, and let it go down. And I said, "Okay. Okay, tell me when they're ready."
Yeah.
It was so different from the
American whole process. Experience. Yes, yeah. I know. Yeah. So fun. Ireland's so great. So, so we're busy planning. I meet with Father Dan and a couple of the other priests this week, and we're going to plan a great event here. They're really excited about helping out with it.
Oh, I bet. And Father Dan's such a pro-life stalwart, too. I see him at all these events, the Bishop Grego's maternity home dinner and your dinner.
And our testimonials will be from women who actually an Irish priest interceded for their child. Oh, wow. So that's going to be really special. Wow. Yeah.
Marie, anything I didn't ask you that you wanted?
I think we've got it all.
Very good. Well, thanks so much. Congratulations.
Thank you for having us, and we'll keep celebrating.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll take a quick break. God bless you, too. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on A Bishop's Hour right after this.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, showing that God is love and God is just.